If you have your Bible this morning, let me invite you to turn to Jeremiah chapter 29. We're going to be in Jeremiah chapter 29 today. So if you've got a copy of the scripture, you can follow along there. If not, the words are going to be on the screen. But let me just add my voice too to all the fathers today. Happy Father's Day. And I'm so grateful for our fathers today. And, my dad is an amazing man. And I find myself, I just turned 40 this year, I find myself doing exactly what I said I wasn't going to do. And that is do everything that my dad did. So my dad was a pastor. And so I said, I'm not going to become a pastor. Well, I'm celebrating 19 years in ministry this year. You know, I said, hey, we're not going to buy a minivan. Well, when we went to four kids 4 years ago, we bought a minivan, all right? And, you go on and on and on. I said, I'm not going to follow my dad's footsteps. One of the ones I'm struggling with the most is my dad is a very frugal man, very frugal man. And when I was growing up, going out to eat, that was a privilege. That was something we got to do as a reward. My kids think that going out to eat is a right. You know, I remember the other day we were going somewhere and our kids were like, hey, can we stop at Chick-fil-A? And I was like, listen, we've already eaten out today. And they're like, well, yeah, we've just eaten out once today. And I'm like, no, we're going home to eat. But I was tired a few years ago, and I wanted to put my foot down and teach my kids a lesson. And I was like, listen, we're not going to eat out all the time. And we were on a road trip. And we were on a road trip, and we were driving. And when we were on road trips when I was growing up, we always packed our lunch. My mom would put a cooler in the back of the van, and we would pack our lunch. Well, we don't do that. But I decided I was going to simulate that. And we're driving on this road trip, and I see a Publix. And I decided, you know what? It's about lunchtime. I'm going to whip it into the Publix. My kids have this sheer look of terror on their face. Like, what in the world? It's lunchtime. Why are we going to Publix? We're going to buy groceries, kids. And we're going to go have a picnic. And you would have thought the end of the world was coming. Wailing and gnashing of teeth. And so we go into the Publix. And by this time, my kids are complaining. They're yelling and screaming. Carmen's not real sure. She's going to follow me in my lead, but she's really not on board with this. And about halfway into the Publix, I decide, you know what? I've made up my mind. We are going to do this. And so we get into Publix, and we go down the lunch meat aisle, and we buy lunch meat. Then we get to the bread aisle, and we have to buy bread, right, a whole loaf of bread. And then I remember one of our kids has a lot of allergies, and so we got to think about him. And so we buy all this food, and we get out into the parking lot, and we start to have our picnic. And by this time, I'm frustrated. Like, we're not going to a park to have the picnic. No, we're going to have the picnic right here in the parking lot of the Publix. You know, and you get out there, and you realize you didn't remember half the stuff you needed, so the kids are, like, spreading mayonnaise with their finger. You know, it's like, oh, let's put it on there. And I realized, you know, hey, we just spent $65 in Publix to have this experience right now. And then the classic line of the whole day was my son looks up and he goes, Dad, there's a Subway right there. It's like we could go in there. But I find myself becoming more and more like my dad. In so many ways, my dad is a hero to me. I'll never forget, about 20 years ago, we got invited to go on a trip to Southeast Asia. And my dad went with me, and it was an amazing, amazing experience. And we ended up spending most of our time in Vietnam. And we got to spend a lot of time. Well, my dad's a Vietnam vet, and this was one of the first times that he had been back since the war. And so we spent 4 days going all over the city of Ho Chi Minh City and up to the Central Highlands and all around Vietnam and then down to the Mekong Delta, and really an amazing time. Well, something extraordinary happened while my dad was there. God got a hold of him in a real and unique way. Now, remember, my dad was a pastor, and so he was following Jesus, but God got a hold of him in a real and unique way. My dad came back from that trip changed, and he decided that he was going to spend the rest of his life investing in the people of Vietnam. And so one of the things that he did is he wrote a book. He wrote a book teaching college students how to do basic business principles, how to do interviews, and how to write a resume. And he goes all over the country of Vietnam doing these seminars teaching college students. And over the last 15 years, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of college students have gone through a seminar. But one of the things that he put in the back of this book that he wrote was the Gospel of John. And so he knew that he wanted to build everything that he was doing on the gospel of Jesus. Stories of Christian people were all throughout the book, but he wanted to leave the students with the gospel of John. And so he had been conducting these seminars for years and years and years. 2 years after one of these particular seminars, my dad and a team of people were up in the central highlands of Vietnam. Now remember, most of these seminars happened down in the south in Ho Chi Minh City, in the major city. But 2 years later, they're up in the central highlands and they're in this very remote village. And they're going to these villages, sharing the gospel with people and distributing Bibles all over the central highlands of Vietnam. They get to this one particular village and they walk into the village and they start talking to different people in the village and come to find out that there were already believers in the village. And it was amazing because every village they had been to that day, there were no believers that they could find. So they start talking to all these believers and they're like, well, what's the common denominator? Who shared Jesus with you? And one of the guys goes back to his home, comes back a few minutes later, and guess what he was carrying? He was carrying the book that my dad had written. And he pointed to the back, the Gospel of John. This guy had gotten a hold of this book, had read the Gospel of John, and had come to faith in Jesus and began to lead the entire village to Jesus. The reason the gospel got from the city out to that village is that a college student that was in one of my dad's seminars went back to his home village after college was over and took that book and the Gospel of John with him. And today, there are believers in that village today because of that seed that was spread. Now, here's the thing. My dad, if you saw him today, you wouldn't think of him according to our typical definition of a pioneer, but he's a pioneer. He is pioneering new work in a place where it doesn't exist. And you know what what's happening there? As he's pioneering this new work, people are coming to faith in Jesus. Their lives are being changed. But you know what also is happening? My dad is being transformed every day. He is getting new life because of the activity that he's doing. My dad turned 70 this year, and every time I talk to him, he's always talking about his next trips to Vietnam. And he's got bigger vision today than he had 20 years ago when he started. And he keeps rejuvenating himself because of the pioneering spirit that he has. And what I want to talk to us today about is, what does it look like to have a pioneering spirit? What does it look like to have a pioneering spirit? What does it look like to have a pioneering spirit in our families? What does it look like to have a pioneering spirit individually? What does it look like to have a pioneering spirit as a church? And that's what we're going to look at today. I want to show you a couple definitions of a pioneer. And they're going to come up on the screen here, and I'm going to read these out for you. The first definition of a pioneer is this: a person who is among those who first enter or settle a region, thus opening it for occupation and development by others. All right, so we've probably seen definitions like that before. Let's read the second one. The second one is one who is first or among the earliest in any field of inquiry, expertise, or progress. Pioneers in cancer research, for example. And then number three, and I think this is the one that we're gonna hang on to today. Definition number three is an organism that successfully establishes itself in an area, thus starting a new cycle of life. So what does it mean to be a pioneer? A pioneer establishes itself in an area, and you don't just establish yourself for the sake of establishing yourself, but you establish yourself so that new life can emerge. And that's what I believe God is calling us to as individuals, and I really believe that's what he's calling us to as a house. Some of you strolled into Cumberland today, and you're wondering, why is Passion City Church in Cumberland? Why are we establishing ourselves in this part of the city? Well, one of the reasons we're establishing ourselves in this part of the city is so that we can see new life emerge, so that we can see people come to faith in Jesus in this part of the city and beyond. That's why we're here. That's why we need to be a pioneering church. I love cities, and I love studying cities. I love diving into the ecology of cities and what God is doing and his purposes for the cities. And here's one of the amazing things that I think about when I think about cities. We, today, we're living in the urban age. Now, some of you are from like Dawsonville, and you're like, I don't really feel that urban out in Dawsonville. I heard a big cheer for Marietta. Marietta is an emerging urban metropolis there. That's what Marietta, but most of us don't think of ourselves as urban, especially living in the South, living in Atlanta. Yes, Atlanta is a city, but yet we got a lot of trees and a lot of grass, and we got a lot of things that major cities don't have. But we live in the urban age. You know that 1900, less than 10% of the world's population was considered urban in 1900. In 2007, the world became 51% urban, meaning that more people lived in cities in 2007 than at any other time in human history. And most sociologists project that by 2050, 75% of the world's population is going to live in cities. Now, here's what that means in Atlanta. All over the world, 3 million people are moving to cities every week. 3 million are moving to cities every week. We're starting to feel a bit of that here in Atlanta. Some of us are probably thinking all 3 million are living in Atlanta today, right? But here's what it means for Atlanta. Atlanta, the metropolitan area, currently has 6 million people who live in the metro area. 6 million people. Most of the people who study the trends expect that in the next 25 years, Metro Atlanta is going to grow by 2.5 million people. 2.5 million people. And a lot of you just grabbed your heart right then and just started to think about the traffic and, man, it's bad now, and what are we going to do then? 2.5 million people in the next 25 years. The city of Atlanta, city proper, has 456,000 people. I was just with Tim Keene, our city planner, a couple of weeks ago, and he says that they are projecting that a million more people will move into the city of Atlanta over the next 20 years. So it's going to grow by 200%. The entire region is going to grow by 45% over the next 20 plus years. Why is that important to us today as a church? Think for yourself just for a moment about all of the churches that are in Metro Atlanta. And think about the long, rich history of many of those churches. I can take you to many churches today that were started in the late 1800s, and we can think about those if you've been around this area for a long time. And then, of course, you've got new churches. But here's the reality. In the next 20 years, if we just want to keep pace in Metro Atlanta, we've got to plant 50% more churches. We've got to start 50% more churches. So you think about all the churches that are here, 50% of them have got to start new churches just to keep pace. Do we think that's going to happen? The odds are stacked against us. But that's the challenge that's out in front of us. People are coming here. The opportunities for the Great Commission, the opportunities to see Jesus' love spread in tangible and real ways, they're here. They're coming to our doorsteps. And the question for us is, what are we going to do about it? And I believe that God is calling us to be pioneers, people as individuals who plant ourselves in a given area, therefore seeing new life spring out. He wants us to be a church that plants ourselves in multiple new areas so that new life can result. In Jeremiah 29, we see an amazing story about the people of God, and they've been carried off into exile. Now, many of us love to quote the verse Jeremiah 29:11. Jeremiah 29:11 says, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and to give you a hope and a future." But could you imagine quoting that verse today in an Iraqi prison camp? And that's exactly what the people of God were doing. When they heard this verse quoted to them, they were doing it in the context of being enslaved in Babylon. And Babylon today is just 60 miles, ancient Babylon is just 60 miles south of modern day Baghdad. So imagine these people have been carried off into exile, and they hear Jeremiah the prophet coming to them saying, "Listen, I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you while you're in prison, plans to give you a hope and a future." And that's the context of that verse. And we're going to look this morning at the entire context, because Jeremiah the prophet was called into that context to be the voice of God to the people of God, so that they would obey the law of God and therefore glorify God with their lives. And that wasn't happening. That hadn't been the recent history for the children of God. You see, the children of God were chosen after God's own heart. He had had a covenant with them. And he said, listen, we're going to establish ourselves in Jerusalem. That's going to be our home base. But over the course of time, the people of God began disobeying God. And he kept warning them, sending them prophets to say, listen, if you don't obey me, if you don't follow my law, if you don't follow my commands, this is what's going to happen to you. And of course, the children of God over time continued on in their ways, and they continued doing whatever they wanted to do until eventually God followed up on his promise, and Jerusalem was conquered. It was conquered by the Babylonians, and the Babylonian king, Nebuchadnezzar, carried the children of God off into captivity. And that's where we pick up the story today. Now, I would imagine most of us, if we were carried off into captivity, we would be thinking, like the children of God were thinking, how can I just bide my time while I'm in captivity? How can I just bide my time until I get out of here? You know, some of you felt like that when you went to college. You know, how can I just bide my time until I get out of here? And one day I'm going to be set free from all these shackles that are on me, and I'm going to get to do whatever I want to do. That's how we think a lot of times. And that's how the people of God were thinking. They were thinking, how can we just bide our time until we get out of this place? But God had another mission for them. You know, for some of you this morning, as you think about Atlanta, as you think about cities, some of you just tolerate the city enough to just come in and go to work or come in and go to church, and then you're right back out of here. And for a lot of us, we can think about scenarios in our life where we're just biding our time. Some of you are biding your time at your job, and you're just hoping that the next best job is going to come along. Some of you, and this is going to hit close to home for me, some of us are biding our time with our kids, dreaming of a day when they move out and so that we can have our home back. And I'm not really sure. That may be a great thing, actually. But a lot of us, our natural default in life is just to bide our time. And that's what the children of God, the people of Israel, were doing when they were carried off into Babylon. They were just wanting to bide their time. But God shows up through the prophet Jeremiah and says, listen, I don't want you to bide your time. And that's what we're going to look at today. We want to be pioneers who don't just bide our time, but we want to be people who establish ourselves so that new life can exist. So let's pick it up in verse 4 of Jeremiah 29. Here's what it says. This is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says to all of those I carried off into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon. Let's stop right there. The first thing that we understand about a pioneer is a pioneer recognizes that you build where you are. A pioneer recognizes that you build where you are. What does it say in verse 4? Who carried the people off into exile? Who carried them off? It's not a trick question. God carried them off into exile. Well, doesn't that sound opposite of God? Isn't God supposed to love us and care for us? But God is the one who carried them off into exile. And the people's attitude when they got to exile was, listen, let's just see if we can't grin and bear it and get through this. But God sends Jeremiah to remind them that you're not just going to grin and bear it. And he reminds them that you need to build where you are. And here's the deal for a lot of us. We don't get to pick where we are currently. You didn't get to pick where you were born, right? Some of you didn't get to pick the job transfer that brought you to Atlanta. Some of you didn't get to pick the diagnosis that you just received. Some of you didn't get to pick the family that you were born into. And I could go on and on and on. There's so many situations in life where we don't get to pick. We don't get a choice in the matter. But the opposite is also true. There are some times when we do get to pick our current circumstance. We do get to pick maybe who we get to marry. We do get to pick some of our job and career choices. And there's all kinds of opportunities and all kinds of things where we get to choose our current situation. Some of us have chosen our current situation in life because of a series of bad choices that we've made. And we knew exactly where those choices were going to lead us, and we continued to make those anyway, and we ended up right where we knew we were going to end up. And that's what the children of God, that's what they found out in their own life right here. They made the decision to be carried off into captivity. If you look earlier in Jeremiah 25, Jeremiah is telling the story of all of his time that he spent warning the people of God. And here's what it says in verse 3 of chapter 25. It says, for 23 years, Jeremiah had warned the people of God. It says, the word of the Lord has come to me, and I've spoken it to you, but you have not listened. So God had warned them through the prophet Jeremiah for 23 years. Hey, listen, if you keep disobeying me, here's what's going to happen. If you don't listen to me, here's what's going to happen. If you don't follow my word and my commands, here's exactly what's going to happen. The people of God had fair warning. And then God goes on to say, therefore, the Lord Almighty says this, because you have not listened to my words, I will summon all the peoples of the north and my servant Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, declares the Lord, and I will bring them against this land and its inhabitants and against all the surrounding nations, and I will completely destroy you. That's what he says. So the people of God, knowing all this, they chose their current situation. So whether you got to choose your current situation today or whether you didn't get to choose your current situation, here's what we all can lean on, and that is that the Lord Almighty is the one who has brought us to the situation. He is the one who has led us there. He is the one that will sustain us there, and he is the one who will ultimately lead us out of there. And he's asking us not to bide our time, but to build where we are. Why? Because he is the one who brought us to this place. So in many ways, Passion City Church chose to come to Cumberland, but in many ways, Cumberland chose us. But regardless of how it all worked together in the economy of God, here we are today, and we are choosing to build in this place for the glory of God. And that is the attitude. We build where we are. Then it goes on to say in verse 5, it says, here's what he tells them to do, right? Now that they're in this place. He says, build houses and settle down. Tell me if this sounds like biding your time. He says, build houses and settle down. Plant gardens and eat what they produce. Marry and have sons and daughters. Find wives for your sons and daughters and give your daughters in marriage so that they too may have sons and daughters. Increase in number there and do not decrease. So we see right here the next thing that a pioneer recognizes that there is a difference between being settled and settling. There's a difference between being settled and settling. And so being settled is that we're going to dig roots here. We're going to put down roots. And as long as we're here, as long as God has us here, we're going to be settled in this place and we're going to build something. And God tells them, listen, here's what I want you to do while you're here. I want you to build houses. I want you to plant gardens. You're going to have shelter and you're going to have food. And then what else does he tell them to do? I want you to get married and I want you to have a bunch of kids. Sounds like pretty great captivity to me. Build a house, plant a garden, and have a bunch of kids. That's what he told them to do. He says, listen, I want you to increase in number here and do not decrease. I want you to flourish in your current situation. I want you to build up in the current situation. That's what it means to have a settled mindset. See, I think sometimes we think of pioneers as people who are just all over the place. And they kind of got their hands in a lot of different things, and they're anything but settled. But pioneers are people who settle in and they seek to build something that will last. People who settle, on the other hand, they just take it as it comes. And they let the temperature of the room dictate their temperature. They let the world's culture dictate their tone. And they just kind of take things as they may. They settle. And that's exactly what the Babylonians, that's what their strategy was. Their strategy was to carry off all of the leaders of Israel. And that's who we see there. We see that the king was carried off. We see that the queen mother. We see that all the artists were carried off into captivity. And what the goal of the Babylonian king Nebuchadnezzar was is to assimilate the people of God into the culture. He wanted them to look and talk like Babylonians at the end of the day. Well, here's what the people of God did. They resisted. And so when they first moved to Babylon, they encamped outside of the city. So they rejected the culture of the Babylonian king. We have two choices when it comes to settling or being settled. We have two choices when it comes to culture and how we react to culture. We can either accept the current culture, we can settle for it, or we can completely reject it. But I think God is calling the people of God right here in these verses, and he's calling us as a church not to accept or reject the culture that we've been called into, but to transform the culture that we've been called into. He's called us to be change agents in the culture that we've been called into. He's called us to be a people who set the tone for the culture that we've been called into. So if something is not just, if something is not right, we don't just settle for the fact that it's unjust and not right. No, we get in there and we change the culture from the inside out. Well, how do we do that? We raise great families is a great start. We raise sons and daughters who follow in the ways of Jesus. We have great churches as another way that we start to transform culture from the inside out. But we don't do it just by fly by night. We don't do it by accepting the current culture. No, we do it by being settled in the culture and building something there that transforms the culture from the inside out. And that's what God was calling the people to do. But how hard is that? When you're in a place that you don't like, our natural default as people is to be negative. Our current tone right now in America is to be negative. And many of us have become just like the Babylonians, and we reflect the culture that's around us instead of being resolved to transform the culture. To set a new tone, to set a tone of positivity, and maybe even more importantly than a tone of positivity, but to set a tone of justice so that all people are seen the way that God sees them. That's the tone that he's calling us as his church to set. But he's definitely calling us not to just reflect what's around us. He wants us to set a brand new tone. But here's the other thing that we're going to see as we become pioneers. As we set out to set this new tone, the enemy is going to be against us. If you skip down to verse 8, here's what it says. Yes, this is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says. Do not let the prophets and the diviners among you deceive you. Do not listen to the dreams you encourage them to have. They are prophesying lies to you in my name. I have not sent them. Here's the deal. The enemy, anytime we do something positive, anytime we take a step forward, the enemy is always going to come after us. Anytime you, dad, try to set a new tone for your family, and you try to lead your family in the ways of God, you can rest assured that the enemy of this world is going to come after you. You can rest assured that when we as a church establish ourselves in a new area, we try to become just in a new area or bring justice to a new area, you can believe that the enemy of this world is going to come after you. Matthew 16, 18 says this. Jesus says, I'm going to build my church. So Jesus is building his church. And he goes on to say, though, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. But here's what we know when we read that verse. Yes, Jesus is building his church, and yes, Jesus will succeed in the end. But what do we also see there? The enemy, the forces of hell, are going to try to come after the church. And we shouldn't be surprised that the enemy is coming after us, the enemy from without. But here's the other thing that we see right here in these verses, that the enemy that was fighting against the people of God wasn't the outside enemy, it was the internal enemy. It was the other prophets who were not listening to God, and they were whispering in the ears of the people, trying to drag them in a way that was an untrue way, in a way that God didn't want them to go. And here's the reality for all of us. As we try to set a new course, as we try to do things that are right, it's oftentimes, unfortunately, going to be the people who are closest to us that are going to have the most negative voice in our ear. They're going to be the ones that are trying to keep us from following God's way. It's not that they don't love us. It's not that they don't care for us. But it's that they're not listening to God. And their empathy for you maybe trumps the voice of God in their lives. And so they're just trying to keep you back. They're trying to whisper these little lies. And that's what happens. And we have to be a people who understand the truth of God. We have to be able to listen to the voice of God and then follow the voice of God and not be drug off by the enemy. Because you know he's going to come after you. And that's what we have to be aware of as people. And then the last thing that we see in this in verse 7. It says, and also. So he says, listen, you got to build where you are. He goes, you've got to be a settled people and change the culture, change the tone. He says, listen, you got to be aware that the enemy is going to come after you. But in verse 7, here's what he says to him. He says, also, seek the peace and prosperity of the city to which I have carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, you too will prosper. Let me read that again and underline this in your scripture. It says, also, what should we do while we're there? Also, seek the peace and prosperity of the city to which I've called you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because what? Because if it prospers, you too will prosper. So here's what a pioneer recognizes. A pioneer recognizes that it serves you well to serve others first. It serves you well to serve others first. Now, that might sound to you very pragmatic. It might sound to you that's not something we're supposed to do in church. We're supposed to kind of give ourselves to others and not really worry about what happens to us. But that's not what that verse says, does it? No, it says, seek the peace and prosperity of the city, because if you do that, then it's going to serve you well in the end. So just think about that with me for a second. Think about if you serve yourself only. If you serve yourself only, then the life cycle ends with you, right? So whatever you're seeking after, if you're seeking after fame, if you're seeking after glory, if you're seeking after wealth, all of that ends with you. And if that's all you invest your life in, things that benefit you, then when you're gone, that's gone and it's over. But if you seek others first, if you put others first, just like Grant was talking about in the giving tonight, when you put others first and you invest in other people and you seek their welfare and you try to serve them, when you have a vision to serve the city first, then at the end of the day, that's going to come back and serve you well. Why? Because if we have a great city, then we all benefit from living in a great city. If we have a great family, we all benefit by living in a great family. Now, that's not our motivation, but it's a byproduct of seeking the welfare of the city. Because when we seek the welfare of the city, it will serve us in the end. So when we serve others first, new life cycles are able to emerge. I love it. Every time I come into Passion City Church, we are always talking about the number of people who've given their life to Jesus. Do you realize that there are thousands and thousands of churches who haven't seen one person come to faith in Jesus in the last year? Do you realize that is a reality for many churches? And we're a part of a church where every week dozens and dozens of people are giving their life to Jesus. Can you imagine the multiplicative effect of that? Yeah, go ahead and give that a hand, because it's amazing. The last two and a half years, 2,000 people have stepped from death to life and given their life to Jesus. So when we invest our time, when we invest our money, when we dig into seeing Jesus's church planted, that has a reciprocal benefit, because hundreds of people now are carrying the name of Jesus. Their life has been transformed. And because their life has been transformed, we're going to have a better city and we're going to have a better church because of their life is now better. It has a benefit to us. So when we invest in the student ministry of this church, when I invest right now, I don't have anybody in the student ministry in this church, but when I invest now, it will have a benefit down the road because my kids are coming for the student ministry. When we invest now in Cumberland, we are investing in the future generations that are going to come after us. And we may not get to see it all, but we know in faith that we are investing for the future, and we're going to see the payoff one day in eternity. This picture behind me is a picture of my great-great-grandmother. Her name is Lucy Clements. She's the stern-looking one down there. A lot of people make fun of the Coes because we have like this Coe glare, and that's where we got it right there from that lady down there in the bottom. But in the late 1930s, my great-great-grandmother and my great-great-grandfather moved to a new part of Louisville, Kentucky. I'm from Louisville. They are the pioneers, they led us to Louisville, and they moved to a new part of the city. And after living in that part of the city for several months, my great-great-grandmother, who loved Jesus with all of her heart, she recognized that the kids in the community didn't have a place to go to church. There was not a neighborhood church in that part of the community. And a lot of them didn't have cars to get to church. So my great-great-grandmother, a good Southern Baptist woman, which this is amazing, she started a Bible study out under an oak tree in her front yard. And over the course of years, in the late 1930s and through the 40s, that Bible study began to grow, first impacting the kids, then impacting the kids' mothers. Then eventually the dads started coming around. And in the 1950s, that Bible study became a church. It was incorporated as a church. It's the Bethlehem Baptist Church. You can go there today. It's on Preston Highway in Louisville. And what had started as a Bible study became a church. Of course, not that long after that, my grandmother, she passed away, and the church continued to thrive and grow and reach people in that part of the city. In 1985, a new family moved to Louisville from Clemson, South Carolina, and they were looking for a church to go to. And that family started attending the Bethlehem Baptist Church that my great-great-grandmother started. And one Sunday morning, the 8-year-old daughter in that family, she walked the aisle and gave her life to Jesus in that church that my grandmother helped start. That little girl, a few years later, became my wife, Carmen. And it was in the Bethlehem Baptist Church there on Preston Highway in Louisville, Kentucky, that Carmen gave her life to Jesus in 1985, in a church that in the late 1930s, my grandmother helped start. Why? Because she saw a need in the community. She saw a bunch of kids that didn't have a church. She saw a bunch of people who were hopeless, without hope in the world, and they needed something. And she wasn't waiting for the pastor or for the mission board or some other group to come and do it. She just did it. And she pioneered what eventually became a brand new church right there in her front yard. And she established herself right there. And for decades after decades, new life came out of it. And part of that new life was life that was going to benefit her future great-great-grandson, somebody that she never knew in the world. But what she planted had an impact all those generations. See, folks, that's what's at store for us as we become pioneers. We really don't have an option to sit on the sidelines. Because generations that come after us, they're going to need Jesus. And if we invest our lives into things that are eternal, if we invest our lives into things that matter, if we invest our lives into things that give life, then the benefit will be there, not only in our generation, but for generations to come. And that's what we get to be a part of, and that's why we need to be a pioneering